B-Pod Studios.
More of Toucher and Rich.
Stuff is never what you think it is.
On Boston's home for sports.
Some people just love to speak in emoji there, Fred.
98.5, Sports Hub.
I know there's not much that I can say that would make things any better right now, but I just want you to see in my eyes how sorry I am for the comments that I made yet. Many people, especially friends, teammates, former teammates, loved ones, people that I care and respect deeply. That was never my intention. I wish I would have laid out what was on my heart in regards to the George Floyd murder, Ahmaud Arbery, the years and years of social injustice, police brutality, and the need for so much reform and change in regards to legislation and so many other things to bring equality to our black communities. I am sorry, and I will do better, and I will be part of the solution, and I am your ally.
What's up? It's Toucher and Rich. John, did that apology distract you with the bird sounds in the background?
I heard it.
Like it did Chris
Forsberg? I heard it in the background, yeah.
You couldn't concentrate, right?
No. It's odd how I pick these things up now.
I'm so ashamed of myself that I didn't immediately catch that when you did that with Forsberg yesterday, but it made me laugh several times yesterday. All right. From the MMQB, of course, Burt Breer joins us, and this has been a very strange week in so many different ways. But when you have, we were saying this, Bert, the other day, when you have Drew Brees being the bad guy in the NFL and Aaron Rodgers being the good guy, something is majorly off. What is, just kind of take me into what you've been hearing happened yesterday when Drew Brees. Because didn't he have like a, and I think it was previously scheduled, but you know, I'm sure the meaning of the meeting changed a little bit. But Drew Brees talked to all of his teammates yesterday after his initial comment about what he said about the flag and kneeling. What did you hear happen?
Yeah, I mean, he addressed them off the top of the call, and I knew, here's the thing, guys. I mean, I think I've said this to you in the past, but those locker rooms, like, the guys in those locker rooms aren't always the smartest guys. They come from all different backgrounds. They have different levels of education, all of that. But the one thing that I've always thought was like a common personality trait, they all have an incredible BS meter, and they all can sniff it out if you're full of it. And so, Drew Brees has been in that environment for almost 20 years now and been in the environment in New Orleans for 16 years now. And so he has a lot of equity built up in that locker room. And for better and for worse, those guys know exactly who he is and have an idea of exactly who he is, which is why I think it hurts some of the guys so much to hear him say what he said, because I think it's a signal to them that he hasn't been listening the last 4 years. And so, I know this, when he addressed them, and even in a virtual setting, which isn't the same as being face-to-face with somebody, even in a virtual setting, if he was full of it, those guys would know it because they know him pretty well. And so I don't expect this to be a problem going forward. He did address it head on. He was very aggressive about it. And I certainly think he's probably given up some level of benefit of the doubt. He has so much equity in that locker room, I think he'll be okay.
It was weird too, Bert. I tried to explain it because, I've got family that live in New Orleans. And if you spend any time down there, I tried to kind of put into words what he, like, how respected he is there. I mean, and I tried to compare it to, he's got the on-field love of a Tom Brady in New England with the off-field love of, like, a Patrice Bergeron times 1,000. Like, he's
or
also...
David Ortiz from what he did during the marathon bombing.
Right.
You remember?
Right.
To me, it was like so much of it ties into Katrina, too, right? Like, I mean, and I say, I always think, like, how we always associate with David Ortiz with the marathon bombing, right? Like, because of the way that he came and stepped up and, kind of spoke for all of us, right?
Yeah, right.
And so David Ortiz is, like, forever. I mean, almost as much as what he did on the field, he's going to be intertwined with that in our city's history. Drew Brees is intertwined with Katrina and the recovery from Katrina into New Orleans' history.
Yeah, and he also did that thing before the season, or you know, a couple of months ago when, you know, he donated $5 million of his own money.
Yeah,
you know, to the New Orleans COVID, you know, helping fight that and testing. I mean, that's massive, and so it's one of those things where, and the other thing too is that, you know, his apology, you know, it doesn't matter what I think, it matters what his teammates think, and it matters what the people around him think, and most of them came out in support of him, but Charles Barkley said something last night which I thought was he nailed it. It was perfect. And he said that what we're getting now is apology porn, where people like to take apologies and they live for this and going, ah, that wasn't sincere. I don't believe that. And then they judge whether they said. To be honest, it doesn't matter what I think. It matters what all those other players around him thought about what he said. And you're right, whether they gave up the benefit of the doubt. The other thing, too, is that, I mean, this is the definition of change. Like, if you wanted, like, if you really wanted to open a dialogue, you had one of the biggest names, most respected names in the leagues, a white player, admitting that he didn't understand it, and now he's willing to listen. And I just think that isn't that almost exactly what you want out of this situation?
We have to stop canceling people. I mean, like, seriously, we have to stop. Like, I don't know what good it does to try to, like, and to me it's like, you know, and look, like, I don't want to get too political here, but I think there's obvious the president has tried to divide us, and I think that there are people that are trying to divide us the other way and shoo anybody who might be open-minded to joining the cause away, and I think that's bad too, you know? Like, when I look at someone like Drew Brees, who, you know, I think, like, clearly made a big mistake and volunteering what he volunteered the other day, and it's not because of anything to do with the flag or anything. Like, I wouldn't kneel, but I would never tell anybody how to interpret the national anthem. You know what I mean? Like, we all have our own interpretations of it. To me, it's you know, he made a mistake because it showed that he hadn't really listened to his teammates and the other guys in the league and what they were feeling and what they were, and if he had been listening closer, he wouldn't have answered that question the way he answered it. It has nothing to do with, like, how he feels about the national anthem at all. And my biggest question here, Rich, to your point, is what would you rather do? Would you rather turn Drew Brees into a symbol of everything that's wrong and flog him because it's easy to do? Or would you rather turn him into an ally and make him understand what you're trying to say?
You need it in the other direction. You need it in the other direction. If you're the NFL or a movement for positive change, you need Drew Brees on your side. That's how much he's revered in the league. And you were talking about the national anthem, Bert. And to me, the fall is going to be fascinating because I saw that 70-second video last night that was put out by, what, there were a dozen players, all of them African-American. Yeah, Patrick Mahomes, Deshaun Watson, Odell Beckham, Michael Thomas, Saquon Barkley, Ezekiel Elliott, and essentially they challenged the NFL about racial inequality. And while it's a very powerful message, the only thing I could think about is
wrong about what you said about protests. Like, they basically said, "NFL, admit you were wrong."
But that's the thing. I mean,
guys, you know what they did? Well, the brilliance of it to me was they were calling the NFL out for the statement it put out, like, last week, and they basically wrote the new statement for them.
Exactly.
They said, put this out, you know, put this out. Like, we want to hear you say this now because this is what we want you, like, and I thought that was what was brilliant about it was, like, we're not, all we're asking you to do, guys, is transcribe this and tweet it.
Bert, think about the fall and think about, is it possible that kneeling during the anthem could start up again as a result of all of this? And if that's the case, I mean, that was turned into a political volleyball for how many weeks? I mean, you had Mike Pence getting involved, you had Donald Trump getting involved, and a lot of these owners who were benefiting from Trump's tax breaks were oddly silent, if I remember correctly. So, I mean, how does this set up for the fall here?
Well, you know, what's even more fascinating is that election year, just like 2016 was an election year. So yeah, I mean, this could get messy, and you know, we'll see what happens. I mean to me it's going to be fascinating to see where this goes in the fall, because you know, these things have these things have been, like, to me, like, when we've gone through cases like this in the past, they've passed with time, but it just, it feels to me like people are determined not to let this one pass, and determined not to let us turn the page, and determined to make people address it. And that determination tells me maybe it won't be gone in September, you know, and maybe these guys will decide to all take a knee at once. And, you know, the NFL is going to have to try to figure out what they want to do about that. You know, because they, when they were working on the policy a few years ago, this is a huge problem for them, and they worked through it and everything else. And they decided not to put a policy in place, which I think was the right move. But they didn't stand in support of the guys who were protesting. Yeah. And so now the question becomes, do you just sit there and let it happen? And then take the slings and arrows from Washington, which could come, or do you stand in support of the players? And I think that was one of the things that you can sort of take from the 70-second video last night too, is they're not just asking you to let them speak their mind or protest. They're asking you to stand in support of them. And will you do that? And that really, I think, has put the ball in the court of the NFL and its 32 teams.
All right, Bert, we have to take a quick break, but there's a Tom Brady story that came out yesterday that's almost tied into all this that I think's pretty funny, and I want to get your opinion on. Can you just come back for just a minute after the commercial break?
Yeah, you got it.
All right, okay, awesome. All right, we'll be right back.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most of us, Keith Urban also has a bucket list. You may be surprised to learn what is and is not on his. Text Keith to 45911 to read and learn more about the central theme of Keith's bucket list. Get a link to the story sent right to your phone when you text Keith to 45911. Go inside country music at BackstageCountry.com.
Sports Hub. Boston sports fans start their day with Toucher and Rich.
There's a disagreement here in studio.
How unusual.
Tell you what, it's what makes us different that makes us great.
98.5, the Sports Hub.
It's been 10 days since George Floyd was brutally murdered.
How many times do we need to ask you to listen to your players?
What will it take
for one of us to be murdered by police brutality?
What if I was George Floyd?
If I was George Floyd?
What if I was George Floyd?
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 I am George Floyd.
I am Breonna Taylor.
I am Ahmaud Arbery.
I am Eric Garner.
I am Laquan McDonald.
I am Tamir Rice.
I am Trayvon Martin.
I am Walter Scott.
I am Michael Brown Jr.
I am Samuel Du Bois.
I am Frank Smart.
I'm Philip White.
I am Jordan Baker.
We will not be silenced.
We assert our right
to peacefully protest.
It shouldn't take this long to admit.
So, on behalf of the National Football League,
this is what we, the players,
would like to hear you state.
We, the National Football League,
condemn racism and the systematic oppression of black people.
We, the National Football League,
admit wrong and silencing our players from peacefully protesting.
We, the National Football League,
believe black lives matter.
Black lives matter.
Black lives matter. Matter.
Black lives matter.
Five of Sports Hub, it's Toucher and Rich. That's that video that came out yesterday with, it was a bunch of different players. Stephon Gilmore, Deshaun Watson, Patrick Mahomes, Odell Beckham Jr., Saquon Barkley, and a ton of others. And
by the way, just real quick, you know what I noticed watching that video? Ezekiel Elliott is enormous.
Yeah,
he's
well,
an enormous
he also has
individual.
That angle.
Yeah, man.
Like there's the, like, from the chin up angle that you can put, and you can do, like, on Zoom, that's just, like, it looks like a guy, like, looking down at you, just like, rah, you know? And some people on Zoom, like, I've been on, like, Zooms with, like, families that, you know, for, like, my kids' school, and, like, the most nerdy, normal-looking people look like these, rah, like, these overlords when the camera's, like, down underneath. Anytime you do it from the down, in movies, like, the menacing angle is always, because it makes them look like these massive, you know, human beings, is from the down up. It's like a camera trick. But Ezekiel Elliott is already a massive human
yes.
being, and he just looks like he has been beefing up here in the off season. And then the angle definitely helps things. But all right, so on a side note, something that kind of came out of – we have Burt Breer, by the way, on the Volkswagen expert, dealer's expert hotline. And this was a strange little aside that came out of all this, because when, you know, Drew Brees started pissing off a lot of his teammates, Jason Lockenfora came out with a story that said, strange little quirk to the Drew Brees saga. Had Brees retired, as he long opined about and strongly considered, I'm told that Tom Brady had very serious interest in the Saints and vice versa. Brady was waiting and watching that closely. Would have been a very real possibility. Have you heard anything about that? And is that something that truly came close to happening?
Yeah, there was the possibility of that. It was contingent on whether or not Drew Brees retired. And if you remember, Brees slow played his decision a lot more than he did last year. Like last year, I think it was right around the Super Bowl when he said, I'm coming back. It only took him a couple weeks after he got knocked out of the playoffs. Here, I believe it was still sort of up in the air going into March. And so, you know, Brady obviously had been preparing for the possibility that he might leave New England, and they were looking at different possibilities. And New Orleans was attractive for a couple of reasons. One, you know, you have the chance to play indoors. Two, you have the chance to play for Sean Payton. Three, that roster is absolutely loaded. Oh, yeah. And so, you know, for obvious reasons, it appealed to Brady. And obviously, for Peyton, what it would have done, it would have bought them another year to find whoever the long-term answer was going to be, or actually, in that case, 2 years. So, you know, whether that's Taysom Hill, they eventually wind up with Jameis Winston. You know, really part of the whole equation for the Saints was they knew they were probably going to need another year or two to figure out whether or not it was Taysom Hill, find what Jameis Winston case is, find a way to find the next guy, and not Brady would have afforded them that time.
All right, your phone is breaking up a little bit, Bert. So the NBA is once again trying to continue to push on, and like Belichick's allowed back at the facility today, I think, right? It's either today or tomorrow, but I know that it's fairly soon. What is this looking like as far as preparation? How have they altered their schedule? And what do you know about how that affects the Patriots at this point?
I've actually talked to a bunch. Now, I don't know specifically what the Patriots are going to do, but I've talked to a bunch of teams that where the coaches aren't going back in because they just don't see the point in it. And they've gotten pretty effective working remotely. And they already have the Zoom meeting set up with players, you know, and those are 4 days a week. And so a lot of teams, a lot of coaches have gotten efficient working from home. Here's another part of it that I think some people miss when, you know, the whole idea of coaches coming back to work is a lot of these teams moved a bunch of equipment to their coaches' houses when everything shut down. And so part of getting the coaches back in the office would be finding a way to kind of reconfigure the offices and get them back set up and up and running. And so, you know, this announcement came on such short notice that I don't know that it's going to affect too much long term. Really, I think the coaches feel comfortable, most of them do now, where they can get the work they need to get done at home. And, you know, whenever the players come back, obviously that changes everything. But until the players come back, I think a lot of teams are just going to keep their coaches at home.
But that's not the Belichick way, though, is it? Isn't he one of those guys that's going to want to – yeah, you said, you know, this year more than any, he is going to want to send a message. Like you said, he's going to be very positive and, you know, in the press and to show confidence that he's, you know, still has faith in this team, and he sends these messages through the media. Don't you think that one of the ways he can kind of send a message that he's all in on this crew that he has is to be one of the guys who is at the facility?
It could be, yeah. I mean, I just don't think it's going to make that big a difference. And – the other question is, can you have your whole staff? Because there's still limits on how many people you can have in the building. And, you know, obviously they'd be working under state regulations and everything else, too. And so, I mean, look, like, we saw Bill was on Nantucket, right, when the draft was going on. Mm-hmm. Is he pulling up stakes from Nantucket on Wednesday, Wednesday afternoon when they made this announcement and coming back? I don't know if it's going to happen that quickly. I just think he's back in the office before the summer break starts, but I don't know that it'll be today.
Is Stidham throwing with Edelman? I'd seen a report there yesterday, and I don't know. I mean, have you heard of that?
Has Edelman found a new best friend?
Right.
Yeah, is he like sending pictures to Brady, texting the pictures of him working out with Stidham to Brady? Like, take that.
Yes, exactly.
Right. right? And Branch goes, all right. It's like, yep, he's a lot uglier than I was. it's like the ex-boyfriend, girlfriend from the new boyfriend. Oh, well.
Who needed you anyway?
but this is something
it would have been more effective with, if it was Jimmy, right?
Sure, Jimmy Garoppolo, then that's something you'd piss him off. He's like, all right, man, have fun with your little boy toy over there. All right, so, but they're doing this, right? Like, you know, Jared Stidham's doing all the right things, I guess we should say.
I mean, this is happening everywhere. You know, Brady has his guys in Tampa. Matt Ryan actually brought all the skill players to California over the last couple of weeks. He had the receivers out there last week, had the tight ends and backs there this week. Drew Brees has brought guys to San Diego. This is a lot like the 2011 lockout, where every quarterback in the league, or almost all of them, are doing this now. Josh Allen had his guys in Florida. I'm sure you saw that. So, Stidham's been working out with guys, and he's been throwing. And part of that was, he'd been working with Jordan Palmer as well. This is like sort of one of those side benefits to everything bad that's happened over the last 3 months is that. For the young quarterbacks, it really kind of gives them a chance to take the bull by the horns and take charge of their teams. And, you know, Stidham, I know, has worked out with some of his teammates and thrown with some of his teammates, which I think if you look across the league, is pretty much par for the course.
Is there anyone who's not? Like, is there any quarterback who just is like, screw it, who hasn't made the effort?
I actually haven't confirmed whether or not Ben Roethlisberger has. So
I was just going to ask you about that. Big Ben just hasn't given a you-know-what for a while, it looks like.
I'm trying to think of who...
You always have to respect it, right?
Yeah. Sure. Like, who's the Jay Cutler now? Who's the guy just like, whatever. I'm trying to figure out that thing.
Pass the ice cream. Yeah.
Rolls into camp like it's 1978 and works his way back into shape.
Right. There's got to be one guy who's like, screw it, I don't even need this. I'm sure Sammy D's doing everything he can right now, because according to your buddy Manish Mehta, the worst kept secret in football is that Bill Belichick covets Sam Darnold and would much rather have him.
And then if you clicked on the link, he didn't even say that in the story.
Exactly.
I know, that's exactly what we were talking about.
That's such
an amazing Manish Mehta awesome troll that he threw out there, and I'm like, I can't wait to read this, and there was none of that, and I was like, oh, come on, Manish. That was journalism blue balls if I've ever seen it.
Hey, look, it's good to know, even in a down period of time, that Manish can still be at the top of his game.
he threw his fastball on that one, no question.
Bert, real quick,
this is kind of changing the subject a little bit. I saw a story, I want to say 2-3 weeks ago, about the XFL and how it's in bankruptcy, but there are up to 30 potential buyers. They want to bring it back in February and try this again. Have you heard anything like that?
Yeah, I mean, I honestly haven't done a ton of reporting on it, but I do know that there was some interest in it, and it'll be interesting to see where that goes. I mean, the NFL would be, I think, in favor of that, and so, you know, I don't think it's impossible. We've seen progress from spring football the last couple of years. Nobody's been able to make it profitable yet, you know, but if you can buy it out of bankruptcy at a good rate, and you've got infrastructure there, maybe it does work. I mean, honestly, I'm skeptical that any of these leagues can work long term, but there's certainly benefit for the NFL if it happens, and having a developmental league. I think the product the last couple of years has been better than what we've seen in the past. So maybe somebody sees some hope for the XFL and buys it out of bankruptcy. We'll see.
Who is clamoring for the XFL? Like, I mean, the ratings kept going down. It wasn't good. I mean, at the beginning, they made some breakthroughs as far as, you know, different, you know, things that the NFL even admitted, like the Sky Judge, where they ended up not going through with. But, I mean, there were certain aspects of it that were interesting, and the mic'd up players on that. But if you don't have stars, it's not going to be successful. No. And I don't know how people just don't get that through their head. Now Joe Murray over here, who is will bet on two turkeys mating.
That's right.
He doesn't care. Like any other thing that you can put that has a score to it and an over under and a spread, he's A-okay with.
Hang on though, is there any possibility
he'll bet on like high school kids playing quarters in the bathroom? Yeah,
dude, yeah. I'm not joking. That's true. So Dan Lifshatz admitted to us that he has bet on high school football before, which to me seems like the easiest to manipulate. I mean, you buy a six pack of beer for a guy on the team,
Who the hell is taking that bet?
That's a great question, but apparently people do.
Hey, listen, anybody will take any bet, Bert. I think you know that. But just real quick on the XFL, though, I thought they did a bunch of things. The kickoff really stood in. The extra replay was outstanding. And I just think having the betting odds during the game, like Steve Levy, I thought that was great when he was calling that. And I think they've incorporated it with other sports, especially the match we just watched 2 weeks ago.
Well, dude, I'm telling you, like the AAF, the whole premise of the AAF was that gambling. The whole premise of it was, okay, we're gonna have live betting on games, and I don't, you can get in the weeds in this. I mean, the TV delay plays into it and everything else, but that's sort of like some of the things that the XFL and AAF had done are going to be incorporated, I think, in the coming years. And one of the biggest ones, without question, involved the gambling and the gambling app that the AAF had. And the live prop betting, I think, is going to be a huge part of what we see when the NFL finally does decide, all right, we need to figure out a way to monetize gambling, which they've been working on for a couple of years now. So there are a lot of ideas that came out of the AAF and XFL that I think not only are good ideas, but ideas that we're going to see in the NFL soon.
All right. Well, it's for a while there was a story that Vince McMahon was going to try to buy it back, and I'm like, well, he's probably the worst position now to do that.
Exactly.
Which I haven't heard it even work. Like you declare bankruptcy, and I don't know. It just doesn't it feel like you should be disqualified from buying your own product at a bank. Yeah, like that doesn't
bankrupt,
sound like
I'm not going to buy it. I'm going to get out of all the commitments that I had that I'm supposed to pay off, but now I'm going to buy it back, and everything's going to be fine. All right. Well, from MMQB. Burt Breer, thanks for coming out with us once again. We appreciate it, man. We'll talk to you again soon.
All right, thanks, guys. Have a good one.
All right, here's Joe Murray's headlines.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking five of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on five we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top five? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.
Tutcher and Rich.
Good morning, guys. How's everyone today?
Oh, it's just a day after day of delight.
98.5 The Sports Hub.
It is Tutcher and Rich.
Hey, Rich, we have an update for you.
Oh?
We were talking about, at the end of every Bankroll Boys segment, what do you usually do?
Oh, yeah, I put some money on a degenerate game. That's right.
Well, Mike Lockhart just came in here and informed us. Now, do you remember what the over-under was for the Korean soccer game that you bet on?
Okay, that's the only thing about my bet that I remember. Okay. I remember that the over-under was 2.5, and they had to score 3 goals. I don't know what teams. I know that it was Korean soccer, and I do know that it started at 5 a.m., I believe.
Yes, we are told, but Mike Lockhart just came in here and told us that they are in the second half, whatever two teams are playing, are in the second half, and the game is tied at 1.
Oh, all right.
So
keep your eye on that, boys.
Needless to say, we're all on the edge of our seats here.
The who are they's versus the I don't know who I bet
exactly.
on. Exactly. Goal scoring.
You need one more to cash in.
That's right. Okay, good. Good, good. This is I like this. Why would you tell me that now? Because now I'm going to be distracted.
Well, you don't know who the hell the teams are. I mean, it's not like you can follow the game.
I don't even know where to find the game.
That's the point.
If I just Googled Korean soccer, they wouldn't give me like a live update.
We know the team, Rich. We know the team. One of them is Incheon. I think it's Incheon.
Okay.
If anybody's keeping score at home on that.
Okay.
Okay. Incheon
versus Gangwon.
Okay. All right.
I don't know. Well, G-A-N-G-U-A-M, maybe?
Go both teams. That's the fantastic thing.
There you go. We're at about the 55-minute mark, I think, of the second half.
55th minute.
Sure.
Can we have like a sounder if something happens?
Oh, like a siren if one of them scores?
You got like, ole, 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 ole.
That'd be great.
Play a cash register if they score another goal.
Just hit the Bankroll Boys theme because once again, and it's been a long time, and I've told you about that's been my... It's weird. It's almost like for some reason a return to normalcy with the, you know, post COVID-19. It always comes back to gambling. Like for me, I don't know why my fantasy is that I am at a casino. It's not even that I just want to go back and go to like a, you know, even like a sporting event or like go and walk down the street and, you know, high five people like in a movie or anything like that. Like I just want to go to a casino. It all comes back to gambling. Like that's my post COVID-19 fantasy. I want to go to Vegas and I don't know why it keeps coming back to that. So yesterday was the first time in, how long, Joe, that I actually put money on something?
3 months, probably.
Yeah, like 3 months. I'm like, I don't even care what it is. Give me Korean soccer. And this whole thing, and you know what it was, too? It was the announcement from the NBA. Like, it was the tease that real sports were coming back. And I, to be quite honest, you know, as I said, Korean baseball, I watched 3 days worth of it, and I was done with it. Everything else has pretty much bored me. You know, any kind of quote unquote sports that have been out there. The MMA has been pretty good, but in fairness, I haven't bought any pay per views. The MMA stuff that I've watched has been the free ones that are the preliminaries, and that's been interesting. You know, but there hasn't been like a fight that I really wanted to see. Once again, I am a casual UFC fan. When the big names fight, I'll pay for it. But my God, this is for some reason if this thing hits. It's just one step closer to feeling like feeling all good again. Everything's all better in the world. and Joe, now I get it. I get it why you have that weird itch because it's got to be hell for you with nothing to bet on. Because you, unlike Lifshatz, you don't bet on nonsense, right? Like, I mean, I don't mean nonsense, but the sheer amount. Like, he'll bet on like real nonsense.
Yeah.
You'll bet on sports that you understand that you like. Lifshatz will just look at numbers and go, yeah, that looks good to me.
Yeah, I bet on sports that I'm watching. Like, I don't want to bet on something I can't watch. It's just that's not for me. You know what I mean? But and that's why I love the fight, like the fights. I get more amped up for watching like a UFC or a boxing fight than anything else. You know, the Super Bowl this year, I had the Chiefs when they were down. It wasn't good. And then they came back. It felt glorious, you know. But, yeah, for the most part, I need to watch these games or, you know, there's – like I said, I'll bet on the Dr. Pepper halftime challenge of the two people trying to get the football, and you always bet the girl. There's always bet the girl in those situations. Always.
Come on.
Oh, yeah.
Really?
Yeah, because they push the ball into the hole.
What are the percentages on that?
Well, I don't know. But I'm telling you, whenever you're out at a bar and you see that halftime challenge come on, always take the girl.
But you're right. The one thing that would make, you know, the NFL's return and everything else so much better is what they did, you know, on the match where you can bet during the game and they have all of the different bets and the different lines right there on the side of the screen. Now, that's one thing that I would not find obtrusive. That's something that I would welcome. Because even if you're not someone who's betting, you like to kind of know what the odds are. What's the odds that they can make a comeback and do all that? You've seen it sometimes. It's like there was a 0.004% chance with, you know, 4 minutes left in the game that they'd ever be able to come back and win, and they did it. You know, that kind of stuff, it's nerdy, but I like that part. Like, that part of it I'm okay with. But the betting aspect of it, hell yeah, keep it on the TV. It's especially now when I think it's more than likely because a lot of people are hurt, like a lot of economies are hurting, that they're going to try to legalize this stuff pretty quick just to get money pumping back in. We shall see. I do know that when you're talking about the fight game, let me see if I have this here. Anytime that Dana White starts talking about this, it's the greatest.
We have Fight Island. The infrastructure is coming together. Probably in the next week, I'll start releasing pictures of Fight Island. I started looking at all the problems we're probably going to have. And as this thing started to escalate and get crazier and crazier, the number one problem is and will be is getting people in from other countries.
All right. Every time he mentions Fight Island, part of me just goes, oh, hell yeah.
Oh, no, it's a real thing, man. This is really happening.
Where is it? Where's the island?
All right, so I have a friend.
Tell secret.
I have a friend that has told me this is really happening.
Okay,
it should be happening in the next month.
Yeah, your friend
so.
Is Dana White. He says it every chance he gets. Like, he's been saying it. Like, it's
happening. For Dana White, but yeah, yeah. This is going to happen. It's going to be in the next couple of weeks.
Where's the island? I need to know where the island is. There's a lot of water on this planet. Where's the island?
And how do we get Van Damme there to defend his title? I think Van Damme's been in like two movies that were like that. There was one called The Quest, which was essentially they took Street Fighter and just turned it into a movie. And then he made the movie Street Fighter, which was awful and it wasn't very good. But I mean, that is an 80s action movie, is Fight Island. But, you know, as sports start opening back up and the NBA starts playing, and like so at least they're playing, like Fight Island doesn't quite have the... Oh, I don't know. What's the word that I'm looking for? Like, it's not as risky as it used to be. Like, before, when they were talking Fight Island, the middle of all of this, you were like, oh my God, this is so dangerous. It's almost like, remember when you saw, I don't know the first time you ever saw a UFC fight, like when it was birthed. Like with UFC 1.
Yeah, Chuck Liddell back in the day. Like, that's what I started watching.
So you have to understand, Joe, is when that first came out, this was before like huge cable pay-per-view buys, that got around via people who knew people giving each other like videos of it. Like, you know, like DVDs or even back in the day, VHS tapes. The first one I ever saw was on a VHS tape. And I was in high school, I think. And I remember seeing this going, how is this legal? I mean, I remember there being fights where it would be, I mean, it basically looked like, as I said, there was no real matchup as to weights or anything like that. It would be like a super tall guy who was from, you know, Zimbabwe versus like big fat hillbilly trucker guy. And they would put those two together. And I remember at one point, big fat trucker guy got down on all fours because he fell. And the dude just kicked him right in the face and part of his cheek flew off. And I started going, how is this legal? It was like an underground thing everyone kind of passed around. And for the first time, Fight Island felt like that. Like, ooh, I don't think this is responsible at all. I think that they're doing things that are fairly reprehensible, but let me just tune in to see what this is all about. It doesn't quite have that mystique anymore, or that feeling of danger, because, you know, by the time Fight Island comes around, there's going to be these things everywhere. And to be quite honest, it's going to be huge. The name is going to help. The only thing that will make it truly bigger than it should be, is that if you got somebody like Conor McGregor to do it, like if you've got like, you know, Habib or McGregor or a guy that's a name, and you did Fight Island, it might be the biggest pay-per-view they've ever had, which is saying a lot because they've had some really big ones. But I mean, you want to talk about who's been the winner in all this? Like, what league's been the winner? Oh my God. And it's been the UFC. It's been the UFC.
And you've said it a few times tonight, John, getting eyes on the product.
Yep.
UFC will now have five events in legitimately 5 weeks. And, you know, we've had how many great fights. I mean, this is going to be the tomorrow's UFC 250. We're going to see the best women's fighter in the world, Amanda Nunes, tomorrow. And, like, we've had our eyes on these up-and-comers. They haven't been the Conor McGregors or any of the big names. The people who have been fighting the last 5 weeks are what's going to continue that sport to continue to carry on after the Conor McGregors,
you know,
and guys like that.
It's a good point you make, because UFC isn't necessarily taking dollars away from the major four sports. What they are taking dollars away from, and they've been doing it systematically for, what, a decade, is boxing. Boxing will have the one big event, like the McGregor-Mayweather thing, which I thought was ridiculous, but generated, what, $250 million in revenue in you know, online buys like yours, Rich, and other people, and people who wanted to pay astronomical pricing to get there. Boxing isn't doing anything. And when they are doing something, it's for, you know, the WBU light heavyweight title that no one cares about. This is an event. This is Dana White. This is a charismatic leader. I mean, boxing doesn't have that charismatic leader to lead the sport into the future. UFC is all a pyramid. It's under one guy. That one guy is taking control of the sport and is, I don't know what you call it, a rebel of doing things, but he's organizing events that are getting eyeballs on him by being the way he is. Yep.
It is so
good for the UFC.
Fight Island. Step this way and there will be a mine planted into the octagon. That's what they need to do. Yeah. They need to have like booby traps. Make it really like fight on. They can't get into the octagon unless they go through an Indiana Jones type of cave where they have things being shot at them and where they have to fend off all sorts of people who live on Fight Island who are defending their land from being desecrated by the UFC people. Fight Island. Make it truly like an 80s action movie. And now we're talking. Oh my gosh. It's such a stupid concept, but every time he talks about it, that dumb part of me that gets excited by explosions gets excited. It could be, you know what? If you called it any other name, I wouldn't even care. Somebody said, I need the fighters to come in on boats like in Mortal Kombat.
Cool.
Of course. Absolutely. You have to make that happen.
Mortal Kombat.
By the way, have you seen the newest Mortal Kombat? Like what it looks like?
No.
Okay, I grew up on Mortal Kombat, like Mortal Kombat, 2, 3. I mean, yeah. Those are games that I clocked in way too much time playing Mortal Kombat 2 and 3. But, like, the newest one is so gratuitously violent. Like, I mean, it's just, like, absurdly violent, to even the point where I'm like, oh, sweet Lord. Like, this could, like, turn... there is... because, you know, the whole thing about Mortal Kombat was one of the first games that was a fighting game that had, like, a lot of blood. And the way that if you knew the move... you could finish a guy, and that meant you didn't just knock him out or he didn't just fall over. You would do something like grab his spine and rip it out of his back, and that would be the end of it. It would go, finish him! Fatality! Yeah. Or, like, there'd be times where, you know, one of the guys would take his hat and blades would come out of the hat, and they would just slice the dude in half. And, like, it was super realistic, and blood would shoot everywhere. It was so bad that on the Sega, when the first one came out, the Sega Genesis, that it didn't have blood, and you had to know a code in order to trigger the blood. It was ABACABB.
ABACABB, yeah.
That's right. It was the blood code. Everyone knows
I still
the
know
blood
the Contra code.
Code,
bro.
Well, dude, everyone knows the Contra code. What kid didn't know the Contra code?
I still forget the Mike Tyson code, though.
007-373-5963. That one goes straight. Yeah. Now, unfortunately, now it goes straight to Mr. Dream because Tyson no longer a part of the reissue that they came out with a couple of years ago. But I mean, no. So, but now the new Mortal Kombat, like there's a scene. They put out a trailer for it. I think it's like been out for a year, but they put out a trailer for it. When they did, there was a scene where it's like someone takes one of those the spiked ball on a chain, and they whip it at this guy, and it puts a bunch of holes in the guy's chest. But when that happens, sprays of blood shoot up into the sky, and then the sprays of blood sharpen and turn into daggers and impale him through the skull on its way down.
Jesus.
I mean, dude, I'm into like violence and stuff like that, not as much as Jace do, but dude, that's like... That's way on a different level. Like, you got to kind of be all sorts of messed up to even invent that. But God bless Dana White for triggering that one part of our souls that craves things like Mortal Kombat and Bloodsport and The Quest and dumb movies like that. I'm all in. By the way, I'm being told it's still 1-1.
Yeah, I got my eye on it. 65th minute.
All right, we'll keep an eye on that. All right, we'll be right back.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most fans of country music, we're excited to learn that Luke Combs was back in the studio working on his next album. We've come up with our list of iconic Luke Combs music videos. Yes, Lovin' On You made the cut. Text Luke to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Luke to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.